Thank you very much, and welcome to the game that invented word processing long before the silicon chip was ever heard of. And our teams, as ever, are Dilys Powell and Frank Muir. And Antonia Fraser and Dennis Norden. And we start, as always, with an etymological exploration. Frank, what's the meaning of fenestration? F-E-N-E-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-N.
Well, defenestration, which one always thinks of first, was a sort of Central European, sort of bohemian practice, isn't it, of flinging people you didn't like out of the window. So fenestration is the opposite of that.
What, flinging
into... Or, I rather think it's making windows.
There is another meaning of fenestration, still to do with windows. It's not just making them, but you can refer to, you know, I don't think much of your garden, but I like your fenestration. Do you know what that would mean?
Well, I'd like to throw you out of the window.
Let's leave you with your 2 marks. It means the arrangement of the windows is also... The house's fenestration is the arrangement of its windows.
It was actually double glazing that put paid to defenestrate.
Antonia, what is the meaning of gibbous? G-I-B-B-O-U-S. Or it could be gibbous, but I think it's gibbous.
Well, it's a beautiful word, and I know it's always applied to a moon, isn't it? Or it's sometimes applied to a moon.
Give us the moon.
Yes, that's 2 marks between you. You've got the 2 marks. Could you now give us the meaning?
A gibbous moon, is it a faintly orange moon, or is it the moon that holds the little moon?
Let me give you... Somebody wrote, William de Longchamp had a gibbous chest...
Oh, it's concave, isn't it?
No.
Or con...
Antithetical...
Sort of convex?
Sort of convex, that's right. Yes, it is. You've got your 2 marks. It's convex or protuberant. Dilys, what's the meaning of condign? C-O-N-D-I-G-N.
Condign, that's a kind of praising word, I think. Praising word.
Well, used to be, but since Macaulay's time, it was... Less praise than
really?
It.
Yes. I thought it meant kind of worthy.
Yes, worthy, deserved. Yes, you've got your 2 marks. Yes, two.
And worthy is praising, isn't it?
Yes, but Macaulay said that it started a usage which meant worthy because of your crime. So it was. He wrote about brought to condign punishment as a traitor. So it's not.
Who deserved it?
Deserved. Your deserts, really. Anyway, you've got 2 marks. Well done. 2 marks to do it. Dennis, what's a digraph? D-I-G-R-A-P-H.
I should think it's a Fleet Street abbreviation for a photograph of the Princess of Wales.
2 marks. 2 marks to Dennis.
Failing that, medical.
No, it's not medical.
Oh, isn't it? It makes a change.
I think Frank might...
Did you bring me in?
It's more in his area of sort of knowledge than mine. Does that's a clue of any
drinking,
sort?
Yeah. Mm.
It's rather loose clue. It's two letters with but a single sound. That's really its meaning. Two adjacent letters with but a single sound, like PH being fiddle-dee-dee.
Yeah.
Or EA in head.
Yeah.
Before we go on to round two, here, Frank and Dennis, are the quotations you were given for the last round. Frank's is The Sound of Music, and Dennis's, This Was the Noblest Roman of Them All, from Julius Caesar. And now we go on to a round in which our word setter, Peter Moore, brings together two of his favourite phrases, because he calls it a lucky dip into a mixed bag. And you can't really get much luckier than that. Frank, A familiar, rather endearing English statement rendered in Chinese is wo ai ni, and in Japanese is watakushi wa anata wo ashimazu. That's the South Island intonation you will have gathered. I thought it would be easier for you. Hand upon heart, can you translate the statement?
Yes.
Don't look at me, though.
I can't find my heart.
It's on that side somewhere.
It's terribly well known, this, in fact. It's my egg foo young has been struck by lightning.
Two marks.
What does Mr. Moore say it is?
Oh, Mr. Moore says, I love you, but I'm...
Oh, you don't know these private correspondence, do you?
If anybody could pronounce it properly, would mean I love you in Japanese or in Chinese, but Frank, for his inventive answer, gets 2 marks. Well done. Antonia, the famous epitaph, O Rare Ben Jonson, on his tombstone in Westminster Abbey, is said to have been mistakenly carved by the stonecutter. What was the intended inscription?
Was it a sort of a simple inquiry? Oh, where is Ben Jonson?
It was a bit late when he was carving the thing. No, it wasn't quite that. It was.
This is one of those uncheckable things, isn't it? Wasn't Orari?
That's it.
Pray for Ben Jonson, but it's. As to the truth, you'll have to ask the British Museum, or Frank will do.
We'll give you an Antonia 2 marks.
It's one of those things like Kismet Hardy.
Dillis, what proverbially has the nose of a dog in common with the knee of a young woman?
Something very indelicate, I should think. they're both cold.
Yes.
Cold.
A dog's nose and a maid's knee are ever cold. 2 marks to Dillis.
Is there any evidence to support that? Curious assertion.
The rest of us got hot knees or something. That's what I
wanted. Dennis, according to the Oxford Book of Quotations, the shortest poem ever written is entitled On the Antiquity of Microbes. Would you like to recite the poem in its entirety?
Yes, it's Adam Haddam.
That's it, 2 marks to Dennis. Next we come to a round of near synonyms, of words of almost the same meaning but not quite. Frank, distinguish please between flagrant and blatant.
Thank you. Flagrant is overpoweringly blatant. it's kind of obvious and strenuous, and blatant is uncontrived, isn't it? It's you're not ashamed of showing how vulgar you are.
There is one thing that about blatant that I think blatant is the easier one to get. There's one characteristic that blatant
applies to people.
No,
it's
a quality. It's the way in which.
Well, it's shorter than the other one. Shall
I put you out of your agony?
A quick shot.
Yes. Well, blatant is essentially noisy. It's noisy, vulgarly or offensively clamorous, noisily obnoxious. And flagrant is essentially flaming, flagrant in that way. It's shocking, notorious, scandalous, reprehensible. But I think it's the noise.
If you catch somebody in blatant delicto, you can hear them as you come up the corridor.
That is exactly that, and a bonus mark to Dennis for that coming to the chairman's rescue.
And flagrant is also a Chinese smell.
Antonia, what's the difference between turgid and turbid? They're near synonyms, but not quite.
Well, turgid is often applied by reviewers to prose. Mm. sometimes.
Often wrongly, but it can be applied rightly. And if it were applied rightly, what quality would the prose have?
Sort of stodgy, wouldn't it? Turbid is in an awful... A whirlpool is turbid, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, can be.
I mean, it's tremendously disturbed.
What characteristic does turbid water have if it isn't disturbed?
It's...
If you hold it up to the light and say, that's a bit turbid...
You can't see through it.
Exactly.
Oh, anyone knows that. I didn't realise that's the answer.
So we've got you a mark for turbid, which is sort of muddy, impenetrable, opaque.
Yes.
Which prose can be. But turgid prose...
It's opaque, muddy, and
no, it's very often used with that meaning, but used wrongly. The real meaning of turgid, shall I tell you, is swollen, inflated, grandiloquent, bombastic, which we forget, actually. I think that it's moved towards turbid. So thank you to our word setter again for putting us right for the future. Dillis, what's the difference between kith and kin?
Ah. it's a matter of relationship.
Yes.
Kin means a member of your family, a family relationship.
Yes.
I think kith is a bit further off. Kith can mean the same... nation or friends or something, but not a member of the family.
Yes, that's right. One's relatives and acquaintances are kith, you know, countrymen, friend, anyone who's prepared to lend you their ears.
Kith in coven.
So, two marks to Dillis. Dennis, the difference between to flout and to flaunt. Flout
is a sort of willfully disregard a rule or an instruction, and to flaunt is to show off or be ostentatious. And I think it's transitive. I think you have to flaunt something.
Flagrantly, you could flaunt.
You could flaunt flagrantly and flout blatantly.
There is actually one quality of flout that the dictionary deems essential, because it started with mockery. To flout is to make, to pastiche something in a way that that ridicules what you're pastiching or parodying. Anyway, you've got your marks, and I just threw that in to show that I had actually read the dictionary today. Now for a round of double definitions. One word, two meanings, and I'm going to give you the definition for each meaning, and I want the word. Frank, the two definitions are a mental disposition and to modify or mitigate.
Could it be something like... No.
Related to anger.
Temper.
Well done. Two marks of... Temper, a mental disposition, temper to modify or mitigate.
Oh, yes.
Antonia, the two definitions, a military excursion and a campanologist's handhold. A campanologist's handhold.
Easy for we bell ringers.
Oh, yes. But she's not a bell ringer.
Not a bell ringer. How do you know?
A military expedition is a foray, a campaign.
No. It's getting near to that sort of thing. It's a well-known aunt who gets things thrown at her.
A Sally.
Well done. Two marks to Antonio. Dillis, the two definitions, retiring by nature and to throw at a target.
Shy.
Well done. Two marks. Dennis, an infant stream and to tolerate.
Brook.
Well done. Two marks for Dennis. And now we come to the last round and Frank and Dennis's quotations. And Frank is The Sound of Music.
I sang this live to America last week. You see, this program of ours goes out in stations over the world and in America. And station WETA rang me about a month ago, and a terribly nice girl called Gillian Gibson. And Gillian Gibson rang and said, they're having this evening, this fundraising evening, in which they're having excerpts from all the BBC shows, and could they get through on the telephone, and could I sing some very, very English song they wouldn't have heard over there, make a special... I said, of course, Gillian Gibson, only too pleased. So she arranged the time, it was a live show at 11 p.m. on the Tuesday, last Tuesday, as it so happened. Oh, I was excited. And I decided to sing Susanna's a Funical Man. because they probably wouldn't have heard that in Washington. And I was wondering what could go wrong, apart from forgetting Susanna's a Funical Man. And then I realized that the cats... Now, we've got three cats, and two of them are brown Burmese, who are terribly similar. Actually, one's a border. It's my daughter's catty. And they're almost exactly the same. And we've got our Abyssinian. The Abyssinian isn't dark brown. The Abyssinian is squirrel-coloured. No problem there. But they all sleep in bed, you see, unless they're hurled out. And although our Abyssinian, Kettering, will sleep with Chinto, my daughter's cat won't. And if they're two in the bottom of the bed together, in the middle of the night, suddenly there's... I put a foot out. It was like putting your foot into a bucket of flailing fish hooks. I was lacerated. Now, that could happen. You see, anything could happen which would... maybe I couldn't be able to get to the phone with a lacerated foot. So, my wife said, look, there's a fleas. There's a plague of cat fleas. Buy some flea collars and get them different colours. I thought, that's a good idea. So I went round and I couldn't buy any flea collars. None of the shops had them. They had big collars to go on cats, but they hadn't got them small enough. And it's such a terribly good idea if there's a flea epidemic of fleas. You put a blue collar on a male flea and a yellow collar on a female flea and tether them with a bit of fuse wire, and you can keep them apart, you see, and they won't breed. But I haven't got the collars. So and then my wife said, no, it's to differentiate between the cats. I said, oh. So comes the day and... that this broadcast is going to happen. The cats are undifferentiated, but it doesn't matter because it's 10 o'clock at night. They're going to come through. So I sit up and wait for the phone call, because they're going to do it over the transatlantic phone. 9 o'clock, I'm a tremble. 10 o'clock, I'm waiting. Hand poised. Nothing. The phone doesn't ring. 11 o'clock, nothing. 12 o'clock, half past 12. I thought, well, they've forgotten it, and went to bed. What I've done, of course, was forgotten the time lag. They were quoting local time, so we were 5 hours ahead. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning when the phone rings. Meanwhile, two of the cats had got into bed, and it was the wrong brown, which I didn't know, and the wrong brown was on the left-hand side of the bed, in the bed with me, and Chinto was on the right-hand side. Now, I'd realised there might be trouble, so I'd worn pyjama trousers for the first time, forgetting how cats like a tunnel. Well, about 2:55 in the morning, the brown cat found this left tunnel and crawled up it. Roughly at the same time, Chinto, the Abyssinian, found the right leg and crawled up it. The phone rang at 3 o'clock, just as the cats met. I heard a voice say, and here's Frank Muir to sing an old English song for you. Holding the phone, and the cats met, and the flailing and the fish hooks were out where my legs met. Well, I mean, I just screamed. Well, I didn't actually scream, because I stuffed the sheet in my mouth, and it came out... Eek! Eek!
for 2 minutes. At the end of which I managed to disentangle the cord of the pyjamas, wrench the cats out of bed, and I said, I'm so sorry to England, to America. And the voice said, oh, thank you so much for your song, Frank. We're all very interested in this, and has it got a title? I said, no, it hadn't. But I think now you can say you've been listening to The Sound of Muir's Eek.
Thank you, Frank. I think I'll nip out tomorrow and buy a couple of flea collars. Dennis, let's see how you get on with This Was the Noblest Roman of Them All.
And what a fitting epitaph that is for one of the best known of all those 19th century globe-trotting aristocrats, Leonard Pinchbeck. Lord Pinchbeck, the fourth son of the seventh Earl. He might have been the seventh son of the fourth Earl. Very difficult to tell with all those winding staircases. But what aroused his interest in foreign lands was a chance visit to Colchester, where he happened to dig up two small Etruscan coins. Now, it was a discovery that really startled the world of archaeology, because it proved, A, that the Etruscans must have arrived in Britain before the Romans, and B, that they were very bad tippers. So, his interest in lost civilizations having been whetted, Lord Pinchbeck lost no time in setting out on his travels. His first trip being to the Egyptian deserts, where his researches not only dealt with such long-lost tribes as the Moabites and the Canaanites, they also took in such lesser-known groups as the Samsonites, reputedly the first people to use luggage, and a small sect who worshipped Upt, U-P-T, the ancient god of acute nervousness, and was thus known locally as the Uptites. And these were also the researches that culminated in his discovery in a cave by the Dead Sea of the now discredited biblical document, the Pinchbeck Scrolls, a roll of papyrus that purported to reveal such items as how Adam kept his fig leaf on, certain details of Queen Bathsheba's workout book. And what it claimed was conclusive evidence that the fight with Goliath was fixed. Apparently Goliath was paid to take a dive. However, the publication of the Pinchbeck Scrolls did provide him with the money to finance another foreign field trip. So, disregarding the comments his behaviour was arousing among the top gentlemen's clubs of Pall Mall, where it was commonly held that any aristocrat embarking on that kind of far-flung foray was simply making an expedition of himself. This peripatetic peer of the realm set out for darkest Mesopotamia, the ancient kingdom of the Phoenicians, the long-vanished merchant race who, according to Pinchbeck, first gave the world Phoenician blinds, without which, it has to be said, it might be curtains for all of us. What's more, although that was the expedition on which Pinchbeck was severely injured when a heat-crazed holy man tried to jump-start his camel, it was during that stay in hospital that he devised his unique archaeological invention, a set of small hammers specially designed for dislodging the sand from stone artifacts without splitting them. Stone bonkers was the name he gave to the hammers. Two words they were not slow to make use of along Pall Mall when they heard that his next journey would be to Peru and the fabled Sun Temple of Atahualpec. Now, this legendary resting place, you'll no doubt recall, was the one that had above its entrance door a set of hieroglyphics that read, Atahualpec's curse on all who enter here. And although beneath that was another set of hieroglyphics, more strictly speaking, lower glyphics, I suppose, that said, if you have already been cursed, please disregard this notification. Nevertheless, the warning was to prove strangely prophetic, because it was on his very next journey, this time to the heart of darkest Africa, that Lord Pinchbeck met his curious and untimely end. Of course, it was easy enough for mere armchair travellers, like those fellow club members of his, to mutter that any explorer seeking to ingratiate himself with savage and suspicious primitive tribes should never have even tried to cut in on a fertility dance. But give them their due, these club members were inspired by Pinchbeck's gallant demise to pay this much-travelled member of the peerage a belated tribute, because above the bust of him that they placed in the entrance hall of one of the grandest Pall Mall clubs, they inscribed the clumsy paraphrase of that well-known Julius Caesar quotation, because it reads, "This was the roamingest noble of the Mall."
Thank you, Dennis, for another stroll down history's lane. And I see from our giant electronic scoreboard that Antonia and Dennis are today's winners, so they have to go out on that debilitating lap of honour, while Dillis and Frank can get back straight to the dressing room and have first go at the BBC's current cake. Until we all meet again for our next programme, goodbye.